Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 119. He doesn't play football. Recorded Thursday, February 8th, 2014. This week, the roundtable turns a short discussion about basketball into a conversation. Join Shane Bailey, Blair Smiley, Britton Burton, and Nick Thomas as they look at Pearl's impact, UK's depth, and A&M's new assistant coach. For football, the roundtable looks at some spring performances, Alabama's quarterback, and the NFL draft. The show can't end during baseball season without Blair's help in bringing everyone up to speed on things. All this and more on this week's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is your host, Shane Bailey, back for another exciting NFL Draft Day edition. Got a pretty good, it's an excellent cast of characters that are joining me, but a pretty good as far as total number of individuals joining me this week. I'll just start from my left to right on the YouTube Hangout. If you're watching on YouTube, you can do that at SEC SRT. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We have a website. Go to SECSRT. Just search for that in any of your ways you want to find things, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, however you want to look for it. If you use those six little letters, you'll find us. But left to right, we've got Blair Smiley joining us tonight. Welcome, Blair.
Hey, it's good to be back, Shane. It's been a while.
It has been a while. We wanted to make sure you got a little sleep. I know it's been about 4 weeks since we've had a podcast, and the onus is all on me, but we're going to blame it on you and say that we needed to make sure you needed to get your sleep since you have a new baby that just came out.
That's right.
So congratulations on that, and we're going to blame it on Jameson.
There you go.
So also with me tonight's Britton Burton. Britton, welcome.
Thank you. Good to be back.
We're glad you're here. And then also we have Nick Jones. We got the double shot Alabama tonight. Welcome, Nick.
Yeah, man. It's like
it's a dangerous combination, Shane.
Yeah.
It's always happy over here.
It's dangerous when we get either one of you. So it's going to be doubly dangerous. But we're glad to have you guys. Again, I do want to apologize. It's the first time in almost 3 years we've done this where I've taken – a gap in a podcast this long. So it's all on me, and I apologize for those listeners that listen on a regular basis. We are rolling into football. Britton was saying, well, you know, we can talk football if you want tonight. It's like, well, we're going to start doing our previews in about a month. So it's never too early to start talking football. So we'll definitely get into that. But, I had this dumb idea to start a master's program. And so the last session it ate up every ounce of free time I had. I should have found a way to make this happen, but I didn't. But promise you that we will definitely be better going forward up through football season on getting a more regular podcast out to your listeners. So wanted to say that right off the front. Also, before we get into things, we talked about this before Blair came on. So, Blair, this is new to you, but I want to show these little things off. I got a coaster in the mail. And one for SEC, and of course, one for my Kentucky Wildcats. I want to thank William Swords for those. He hand stitches these. He's been doing it for a number of years. He says he's been needle pointing for over 30 years. And a couple weeks back, he approached me on LinkedIn and said, "Hey, listen to your podcast and make coasters. I'd love to send you one." It's like, all right, cool. So I gave him my address, and Haley goes, "You gave him your real address?" I go, "Well, I'm a pretty easy person to find in the social media realm. It's not hard to get that address if you want it." So I gave him my physical address, but he mailed those along with a really, really nice letter. So I want to thank you, William. I know that he actually said he made those while he was listening to one of our episodes of the podcast. So he's a loyal listener, a fan of the show. Britton says I'm in what kind of company did you say? Elite Company or something like that?
Yeah, Elite Company with some of the other people that he sent those to.
Yeah, he sends one to Terry Sabin every year in exchange for an autograph of Nick Saban's. So I thought that was pretty cool. He's also given them to Mark Schlabach, Paul Feinbaum, and Condi Rice. So, you know, that is pretty cool company that I'm keeping with. So, William, thank you so much for the gifts. And, you know, I'm going to share those with the other podcast members as well. So you're going to get their information as well. I know you mentioned that you'd like to get them as well. The good news for you is you get two extra Alabama ones in your repertoire. So should be pretty easy to get those knocked out. So
the most important part of that whole thing is that we know at least one person listens.
one person listens, yes. And occasionally a second or third, because they'll send some snide comment on YouTube and that has to be deleted because it's not fit to be listened to. I don't care.
Y'all hate Auburn, don't you? Y'all hate Auburn.
I forgot about that cat. And I left his comments up. You can bash on us all you want. Just be clean about it. You know, I'd like to see that at some point some sort of kid listens to this, and I don't need a bunch of F-bombs and GD this and everything on there. So we you know, at least try to keep it somewhat clean. And if you do that, you can say as bad of stuff as you want about me. It's nothing that I haven't heard already on a regular basis. So just keep it clean. We'd love to hear your comments. We like hear positive comments more than the negative ones, of course. But whatever you feel, we'll listen and take it to heart. But we know there's some listeners out there, so we appreciate you guys listening. And so we're going to get right into things. You know, Britton says, do you want to talk basketball? You know, we'll say that it was a great run from Kentucky. I think that looking back at the beginning of the season, that's exactly where you wanted to see them. It's not the route that as a Kentucky fan or Kentucky you expected them to get to the finals. So, you know, I'm not going to dwell on the game or analyze it or anything like that. But, you know, great news from a standpoint of individuals staying versus leaving. You know, all of a sudden Kentucky has something that you don't hear talked about much, and that's called depth.
Yeah, they're going to be 40-0 next year. Well, start the T-shirts.
Can you make that – just cross out that four and make a five. Yeah. You got a bunch of shirts left over. So, you know, on that note, what, Britton? Are you there? Ah, see? He was going to say something bad, and he locked himself up. That's what happened there.
But see, Shane, the smart thing is, and, you know, I tell people around here, don't buy anything with a number on it, you know, like the 15th national championship or anything like that. But from a Kentucky standpoint, why don't you just, you know, not put the year on it and then just have a 40-0 shirt? And then it's good if it happens or it doesn't happen or what.
I disagree.
I mean, we definitely don't need Alabama claiming any more national championships.
Yeah, not
that.
The
1941 is just enough to, you know, to get everything done. They lose to Vanderbilt and Mississippi State, and they still claim a national championship. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. But anyway, on other topics, that I will say this though, Shane, and this is what I love about John Calipari, is if you're a Kentucky fan, it is. When the talent that he brings in, if he can get it all in place, you have huge upside. And when it clicks, it can be really, really good. When it doesn't click, it can be really, really bad, like last year, where, you know, everything implodes, the whole fan base goes nuts, and, you know, it's all that stuff. So with Calipari, it's one of those things where it's, hey, I mean, if you get everybody chugging and he can get them melded together, you know, and I think the key to this year was, you know, the Harrison kids basically figured out how to play towards the end of the year. And you got people like Poitras that was pretty much dead the whole year that kind of came alive in a role playing standpoint. So they put it together there at the end and were impressive to watch.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And what it really talks about is how good a coaching job he has to do to find ways to motivate and get these guys to play as a team and do that year after year and start from scratch, basically. But, you know, with depth, it's going to be, you know, they bought in now. So it's going to be a lot easier next year as far as that goes. As a Kentucky fan, you know you have to be excited when you see all the individuals decide to stay, that it just the horizon looks terrific. It's going to be a beautiful sunrise come Midnight Madness next year. So we're already excited about that. It looks like we've actually just dropped Britain. So
yeah. I mean, all you got to do now is just get your government, state government, to fund your basketball arena, and you'll be good.
Yeah, they had a couple hiccups with that, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, they funded everything for Louisville, so I don't understand what's going on there, Shane.
That was mostly city funding in Louisville, was it not?
It was a lot of state funding, but they also funded a convention center that all the Kentucky people are a little bit upset about. But, you know, convention center, commerce, and, you know, Louisville compared to basketball arena in Lexington, I get it as a business person, but I don't know if everybody else gets it in Kentucky.
Well, so. But, you know, if that's the case, you could get private donors to foot the bill in Kentucky.
That's what I was thinking, man.
Let's just...
Hey, well, I do have another basketball, and I'd like to get all of y'all's opinion on this. What about Rick Stansberry taking on the head assistant job for our guy down at Texas A&M, Billy Kennedy? That was a shocker.
One year out, right? I didn't see that, but that's just...
Yeah, he was just hired as assistant basketball coach. So it's pretty interesting. You know, he left state, and he's been in Starkville, and he's got those young boys, and, you know, he's been out for the 2 years. And, yeah, that's a pretty big get for Billy Kennedy, especially from a recruiting standpoint, to lure somebody that's got the track record of Stansberry to just be an assistant coach and be in the same conference, you know, side of the division. But I thought that was kind of a wow factor.
You've talked about this a lot with Stansberry. It's the X's and O's where he has some weakness. It's not in the recruiting.
Yeah, it was that and being able to manage players and handle players. I think from a, you know, he was one of the things – he's one of the reasons that State got to a 96, you know, Final Four with Richard Williams, because Richard Williams was the X's and O's. He was the guy that can manage players and be a head figure. Stansberry could go out and actually recruit. And Stansberry did, I think, a lot better job than most people thought once he took over the program. They knew he was going to be a heavy recruiter. But he just, you know, he always seemed to just have a ceiling that they couldn't get past. But, you know, he's been kind of sitting around, and there's rumblings that he wanted the Auburn job, and Auburn wasn't even going to look at him. But for him to go be in an assistant role to be able to go recruit, I think that's a big get for Billy Kennedy. So I thought that was a good move.
Now, I think that's an excellent find for A&M to land as far as an assistant. And you knew that as much as he was a Mississippi State guy, that sooner or later he was going to have to coach again somewhere, because it was too much in him to just stay out.
Yeah, and he was a young guy. You know, he was only in his right around 50, 51, I think, when he actually settled down. The weird thing about Stansberry was that he had kids really late. Most of those coaches have kids earlier in their career, so by the time they get to a point where they're in 50, their kids are grown or they're pretty far down the line. But
he was smart.
Boys under eight.
He was smart in that aspect, because when you're an assistant coach starting out, you're making squat.
Yeah.
You know, now at least he can afford to send his kids to school or do whatever he wants. You know, those kids can have a life, but, you know, probably.
Yeah, well, you know, he was going to build a water park on a lake outside of Starkville, and some reason people wouldn't fund and invest in it. So I guess he just decided to go back into coaching. I don't know why anybody would want to not invest in a water park outside of Starkville.
That is shocking.
I would go.
it's fantastic, man. You can catch bass and go through a loop-de-loop slot.
And catch all those state girls in two pieces.
Yeah, man.
But, guys, all points aside, I just want to mention this real quick, and, you know, most college basketball fans know this, but assistant, you know, kind of the head bench coach or whatever you want to call it, the top assistant coach, not only from a recruiting standpoint, but also just from a, you know, bench coaching standpoint, can make the difference for a program. I mean, you look at some of the guys across the nation, you look at the Anthony Grants when he was at Florida, a lot of people say that they may have not have won a national championship when he was there. And the list goes on and on, and these guys that have normally catapulted themselves into head coaching jobs from that bench coach, the head bench coach. But, I mean, Alabama just made a hire. His name escapes me right now, but it's the former Buffalo coach. I mean, I hadn't heard much about him to be their head bench coach. You know, and this Stansberry hire, I mean, Blair, I haven't been on here with you since probably Stansberry. You know, we've never talked about Stansberry. But, I mean, he was a respectable coach, and I think you're right. He was a much better assistant than he was an actual head coach. And with his connections in the recruiting game and everything else, knowing the SEC, I mean, Texas A&M basketball could be competitive again, you know, for the first time in quite a while.
I mean, yeah, I've been actually surprised that Billy Kennedy hasn't done better there, because I think in Texas and Louisiana, especially where they're at, you can go get some players. So, you know, basketball is just a weird thing right now. You know, I mean, you got the Kansas and the Kentuckys and, you know, those, you know, Connecticuts that are getting all these elite players and, you know, just trying to figure out how to get in and find what your niche is, you know, in your program.
That actually to me makes A&M somewhat relevant. I don't know how much higher on the pecking order they can get with that Stansberry get, but at least now all of a sudden there's something to talk about, positive in SEC basketball aside from Kentucky. I mean, you've got that, and then you've got Bruce Pearl at Auburn.
Yeah. You got Billy Donovan, who's
Steady Eddie.
Yeah, about as consistent as you can
Steady
be.
Eddie Munster. But,
and I think you have to look, too. I mean, obviously, we're one league now instead of, you know, two sides, the East and the West. But you look at the teams in the West for next year, I mean, obviously, they're not going to be there. But, I mean, outside of Kentucky and Florida, I mean, I know we had this conversation and, you know, we downgraded SEC basketball for so long this season, and then they surprised us in the tournament, and we kind of underestimated what Martin and Tennessee could do and everything. But, I mean, with the state of SEC basketball right now, I think the upside potential is pretty huge.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, for them to – I mean, we're not looking at, you know, the SEC 5 or 10 years ago where
right.
we were having 5 and 6 tournament teams. I mean, they could be up there in the top 3 or 4 behind, you know, the elite programs pretty quickly.
Well, I think that's what you get is that you can make a leap in the SEC. You know, I actually heard, you know, what is Alabama going to do with their recruiting class and Grant back – you know, they could easily make a jump if they hit with these recruits. Mississippi State last 2 years have not had more than 3 players that are 6'7" or taller, and next year they'll have 7 players that are 6'7" and taller than 13 scholarships up from 7. So you could see them make a huge jump just because they've actually got bodies. I think you got that, and then you got people like LSU that lose you know, you lose your best, you know, big man down low, you know, that you actually have. So, you know, you can go from 9, 10, 11 in the league to 3, 4, and 5 pretty quickly. You know, so it'll be interesting to see.
But you can also go 3, 4, 5 back down to 9, 10, 11.
Yes.
And I think Tennessee did that this year.
I actually, you know, I made it a point to text Drew whenever they made that hire. First of all, I don't know how you're the state of Tennessee and you figure out a way to get turned down by a Louisiana Tech coach. I don't know how you ever put yourself in that position. But I do think the Tindall coach, Donnie Tindall, is a better fit for Tennessee. And I think fans will like him a lot more than they liked Michael White. That's just a personal opinion. But, I mean, obviously he coached the last 2 years at Southern Miss, and I grew up 15 minutes away from there. So my dad actually went and saw a ton of it. He won 27 and 28 games back-to-back, and 2 years ago had 4 scholarship players and 4 returning players from Eustachia's, you know, last team there. And so the guy knows how to coach.
So, Blair, let me ask you, though, why is there such an exodus going on right now? If he can coach and such a good coach, I mean –
That's a good question, Shane. I don't understand the Dylan. What's the Thompson kid? That's he plays he plays Louisville. He plays Louisville Cardinal Rick Pitino defense, full court, just get after you.
Press you.
And he plays a Kansas offense. He does it a little bit different on Louisiana because he goes back to a kind of a matchup zone that a lot of people don't play. It's even a little bit different from Syracuse. But he plays a Kansas, you know, kind of hybrid, you know, one guy in, four guys out, you know, offense. And so he pushes the ball. He's very, very good. And they get after you. So the style of play is going to be totally different from what Konzo was doing and really be more of what Bruce Pearl was. And you'll actually find out he's got a personality. But I don't really understand, and I think he's doing a good job of basically saying, hey, if you don't want to be at Tennessee, I'm going to give you a release because that's just the way it's going to be. We'll still go have the conversations and talk to your family and try to sell you on why you need to be here at Tennessee. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to sit here and hold you hostage. I think that's going to help him in the long run. But I think it's just part of transitions. And I don't really understand the Thompson kid because he's the only point guard they have. And he fits the model of what the guy wants to do. And he's going to get all the minutes. So where the hell is he going to go?
I know.
That's what I don't understand. And so we'll actually see. And I think the recruits, it all depends. I mean, he's already signed three kids this week. So he's going to go get some players and he'll have bodies and he'll fight through that first deal. But hey, it's kind of what it is with Tennessee. I mean, Tennessee fans wanted this. They wanted to get rid of Konzo. So it's what they got.
Yeah.
And I think they backed into a better coach than what they would have had in Michael White.
Kind of careful what you ask for with Tennessee because they're not out of the woods yet. And he might be a better coach.
It's been a fun decade for Tennessee fans, I can tell you that much.
They've shown their true colors this last couple months as far as basketball goes. So it excites me that they do this and that they have ran off a coach that took a team as far as he did in the tournament. And there's no other way about it. They ran him off. Yeah. He didn't want to be there because of the fan base.
Yeah, and he also knew that next year was not going to be a good year for him. And so it's a lot easier.
Yeah, but he had an extension right there ready to sign. So
yeah, but that extension, okay, the extension was I'm going to pay you $500,000 more, but I'm going to lower your buyout by 75% so that I can get rid of you next year for $1.5 million and not, you know, four. So he basically says, I'll pay you more, but I'm really only giving you a 1-year deal. And, you know, and then Cal Berkeley's sitting there. I mean, that's not a bad place to fall into, you know, other than the cost of living race. I mean, that's just, you know, I mean, I think from Tennessee standpoint, the problem I have being, I thought it was kind of BS with all of the stuff. I think it was more of a Bruce Pearl thing than it was a Konzo thing. I don't think it mattered what coach was at UT. I think Bruce Pearl became available and it was all about Bruce Pearl. I don't think it mattered really what coach was at UT. I think this was going to happen because UT fans are so enamored with Bruce Pearl. If you understand that, but I also don't understand why it took them all the way to the end of the year to start playing like they should have been playing the whole year. So there was a little bit of undercoaching happening, you know, along the way as well. So, and they really didn't galvanize until they really said, we need to really start playing for our coach. So he wasn't able to motivate them until the fan base really turned on them. And they really had to kind of go inward and it really kind of developed their chemistry and made them actually play well. So
I'm the last guy that would ever defend Tennessee, but I kind of actually side with their fans on this one. Talking about undercoach, that was a great term, Blair. Every single year, this UT team started off terribly, and then they would kind of get hot the last month, 6 weeks of the season. They did that again this year, and yeah, they went on a nice tournament run, but if you look at the draw that they got, I mean, it was a very, very fortunate draw that allowed them to make that tournament run. I don't think Konzo was that great of a coach. You also mentioned the fact that he kind of knew it was going to be a little slim next year. Well, he hasn't been knocking it out of the park in recruiting. He doesn't seem to be able to get his guys to play well until it's too late every single year. So I don't know that they're not going to wind up being better off for this, because I'm just not sure Martin has the chops to take Tennessee where they were. And then, of course, the Bruce Pearl factor is the other thing that kind of sealed the fate.
Yeah, and I don't really, you know, the thing about Konzo is that I don't think anybody knows if he's actually a good coach or a bad coach, because he spent 2 years or 3 years in, you know, Missouri State, and then he spent the 3 years in Tennessee. He never really got, I think the jury's still out. I think he can still be a good coach. I think he was learning a lot on the job, and as you could tell, but it's, you know, it's a grinded out style of play that is exact opposite of what Bruce Pearl was. And for that fan base, it was difficult. What about you two Alabama guys with the old Bruce Pearl right next door, man? It's going to be fascinating.
I was sick to my stomach when I saw that news. Absolutely sick to my stomach.
I mean, they're going to wear that dude out on SEC Network, man. He's going to have behind the scenes. It's going to be Bruce Pearl. He's going to be in the new, that nice, shiny arena. They're going to sell out at 9,000 people. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah. He's going to win there. I think
he's going to win.
The only good, you know, the positive spin on it for Alabama fans is that just like us hiring Saban forced Auburn to rethink their football, Anthony Grant wins next year, he's out, and we're going to spend money to get somebody who can win, because Alabama will not be second to Auburn.
You mean if Pearl wins, not Grant?
Yeah, sorry.
If Grant wins, he's out.
Anthony Grant better win next year or he's out.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. So that's kind of the only positive. But, I mean, Bruce Pearl's going to make Anthony Grant like it as long as he's there.
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of an interesting thing. I'm with Britton completely. I had this weird feeling. I mean, it kind of reminds me, and I think you guys know, I'm just about as big of an Alabama basketball fan as I am football, which is dangerous sometimes. But just looking back, is this the feeling that Auburn fans had when we hired Saban on that, you know, in 2007 or 2008 or whatever it was? But I guess if there is one silver lining to this is I'm not sure Alabama's going to fool around with any basketball hires from now on. I think it's got to be, as long as Bruce Pearl is at the helm at Auburn, it's going to have to be a top name. You know, I mean, maybe Anthony Grant was a top name when he came here, but I think you're going to have to get a proven head coach who's ready to win, ready to recruit, and who's going to battle Pearl to the death. And, you know, I guess, is it proven? I want to hear you guys weigh in on this, but how long do you think Pearl's going to stay there? I mean, is he going to be content with building Auburn from literally nothing of a basketball history other than Charles Barkley to, you know, SEC prominence? I mean, is he going to be content with that, or is he going to be looking to go somewhere else? I mean, he does love the SEC, I think we've proven. So,
I mean, if you look at it, in my opinion, he doesn't have to go anywhere. You've got, in the SEC, you have two elite programs, Florida and Kentucky. Neither one of those are going to, he's not going to go to either one of those being in the SEC currently. So his options in the SEC are limited. You said he loves the SEC. I think that's true. He loves Tennessee. He barely left Tennessee when he was not the coach. I mean, I saw him at the Nashville airport flying out, and he was coming back that next day, you know, because he loved it. He loved it down here in the South. So this is where he likes to be. You look at the elite programs, there's only a handful of them. And unlike football, you don't have to have an elite program history to be relevant.
Yeah.
It just takes a couple players, the right coach, and all of a sudden you can be relevant year after year after year, no matter where you are, if you have the facilities. And Auburn has the facilities. They've got the money to pay him. I don't see why he would have to go anywhere if he's able to win.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it is he could do something that nobody else has done there. But the other thing is that you throw into it is that he screwed up one contract already. You know, he lost $10 million. And then he had to go spend 3 years and kind of you know, he had to kind of pay his price. And I think, you know, I think the good thing about Bruce Pearl is that, you know, he did do speaking engagements and did go tell school kids, hey, I lied, you know, and I lied and it cost me this. So he's at a place that's going to pay him. And so, I mean, he's, you know, his next, I think most people thought, hey, his next contract wasn't going to be, you know, whatever that was. I mean, what's he getting paid, like $12 million, $13 million over 6 years or something crazy like that?
It's two plus a year.
Yeah. So, I mean, nobody thought he was going to have that big of a payday, especially at a school like Auburn that has no history. So I think Pearl is kind of, I think he's kind of figured out what he is, and I think he can win anywhere. You know, does it mean that, like, if a Kansas or a, you know, a UCLA or something like that all of a sudden becomes available and they want to go after him? But a lot of times when you have those big marquee programs like a Duke or a North Carolina, they really aren't looking for a Pearl-type guy that's kind of in your face and big Mr. Cheer, Cheer, Rah, Rah. He's good at, you know, he hit Tennessee when they were basically a sleeping dog and basically showed them how to win. So, I mean, I think he can do well there. I think there's enough talent in the Southeast that he can get, but I think he's such a name, especially with the SEC network and what they're going to spotlight. He can go recruit nationally. I don't think he's going to have a problem.
Well, and Auburn's so close to Atlanta, and Atlanta puts out ridiculous basketball talent. So yeah. Even if he doesn't get outside of his circle too much, he's going to recruit well. I agree with what you said, Shane, and what you said, Blair. I think he could be there for a really long time. The only thing that's kind of the wild card is a Kansas or a Duke or something like that opening up. That's, you know, kind of basketball royalty. You can't turn that down. But that's also a really good point that they don't really need the guy like Bruce Pearl that sells the program. It's places like Auburn and Tennessee when they're not good, you know, Alabama. It's SEC programs outside of Kentucky that need a guy like that. It's not the blue blood. So
I mean, if he's able to do what he did at Tennessee, I mean, they're going to put a statue in front of the stadium next year. I mean, it's just, that's just the way, because he can energize that fan base like no other. I mean, he energized a Tennessee fan base so much that 3 years after he got fired, they wanted to hire him back.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. I mean, dude, Pearl is so good that I've got three friends that are Auburn fans that live in Nashville, Tennessee, that bought season tickets already for basketball.
Are you serious?
They're not even going to go to game. They can't go to every game. They went ahead. They're like, I'm all in. So, I mean, it's going to be interesting. And I think I just think it's a way, I mean, just the way Auburn, you know, yeah, they went out and figured out, hey, let's quit, you know, messing around on this whole deal. And yeah, because of Tony Barbie, I mean, he was the John Calipari tree, you know, guy that goes out to freaking New Mexico or wherever the heck he was at, UTEP, and, you know, I'm going to walk in here. He's a complete disaster. So, I mean, they just said, let's go.
Yeah, it was a home run for Auburn. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, and we did, just to clarify, 14.7 over 6 years. And, yeah. Guys, I'm not even sure he has to win in national basketball recruiting. I mean, year after year, Alabama and Auburn have proven that we can't keep 4- and 5-star talent in state.
Yeah.
I mean, even when Alabama got Trevor Lacy, he ended up transferring. I mean, you look at some of the other names that have come out of Alabama. I mean, Alabama's got a 4-star in Riley Norris coming, but I mean, the state of Alabama, not known for basketball recruiting, but if you can grab 1 or 2 4- and 5-star players a year just out of your state.
That's all you need.
I mean, yeah, that's all you need. You don't need to bring in 5 guys like Kentucky does.
I think your last two state basketball players of the year are actually in Mississippi State's campus. Sword and DeRunya Wilson, right?
Yep. Yeah. Wilson's playing basketball football.
Yeah. So, which is kind of interesting, but.
Well, when we started this podcast, I never thought we'd spend 30 minutes talking basketball. let's talk.
That's what Bruce Pearl does. That's why it was a great hire.
Tell you what, he's the right guy for. I'm glad, and I don't like the fact that he's in the SEC. That I'll say that he's good. He is good. Blair's right. with all the connections and all the trips he's taken to Bristol over the last 3 years, boy, the SEC Network being part of ESPN just set him up perfect. You're right there from a media standpoint, PR side. You watch out. And I hadn't put that part of the puzzle together, but you make a great point there, Blair. Let's talk a couple minutes on football. I think everybody had their spring games. So Alabama, there's some uncertainty down there, wouldn't you think? That's not the norm for you guys. Is that safe to say?
There's never uncertainty in Alabama.
Just at the one position. Well, two positions. Kicker is a problem area, and of course, quarterback.
But that's your most important position. I mean,
yeah.
Some would say.
You could argue at Alabama that quarterback isn't the most important position, although in football, generally, quarterback is the most important position. So.
Yeah, I don't think Alabama fans are worried because all those quarterbacks that were terrible in the spring game aren't going to be the quarterback. The quarterback was like taking exams in Tallahassee, so it didn't really matter. So it's just a matter of time, right?
Yeah, I mean, so before we got on, Shane was asking me and Nick about that, and it was, you know, is Coker there? Is he looking pretty good? And, you know, he's been there like 3 days, and he's basically walked around campus. And my response was, if he's walking around campus, he looks pretty good compared to what we saw in the spring. So, I mean, there's certainly nerves because anytime a guy comes in and has 3 months to be around the team and is expected to take over, that's a little disconcerting. But, you know, he's definitely the most physically gifted quarterback on campus. Alabama has enough talent to kind of protect him and not force him to be all world. So just got to hope that he's not a complete bum and that he's able to win the starting job, because I don't think anyone else on that team can be a starting quarterback.
What if he was hoping that he's like wondering if he made a wrong decision for leading Florida State because all the
Winston
stuff
may not be there.
Yeah, exactly. All the stuff.
Whatever, dude.
There.
Winston's a baseball player, man. He just gets suspended.
That's right. This is James Winston.
That's awesome.
He doesn't play football. Are you kidding me?
But to hit on the Jacob Coker thing, I mean, there's a lot of people, a lot of media buzz, especially this week in general. And I wrote a post about it. Should be up later this week. Danny Sheridan and so many other people have said, and even Britton said this before we started, that Alabama could be an 8 or 9 win team, especially with Auburn streaking and all these other teams that the strength of schedule just in the SEC alone, without a great quarterback or without even a good quarterback. I think we've made that clear that Jacob Coker doesn't have to come in and be a Heisman Trophy winner. He has to come in and be a guy that's better than what we have, which isn't very good, you know, and he has to embrace that quote-unquote game manager role. But at Alabama, there's going to be situations, especially in the times like the Auburn game and other games, you do have to make those throws. And even though a lot of people like to knock Greg McElroy and A.J. McCarron, I mean, they both proved that even if it was a rollout bootleg, throwing it to the fullback to win against Auburn to take you to the national championship, in Greg McElroy's situation, you still have to complete those passes. And right now, I mean, Blake Sims is probably the most viable option behind him, a guy that's been on campus, White Britton, at least 3 years, maybe four.
I believe he's a fifth year. I believe he's a redshirt.
Yeah. I mean, he just looked awful in the spring game. And Alabama, in my opinion, their second-best guy behind Sims, which I don't think we're going to fall that far. I think even if we get to that point, Jacob Coker is going to be the starter. But it's a true freshman who's been on campus for just a semester, who is an early enrollee in David Cornwell. I mean, he may be the quarterback of the future because Jacob Coker does have 2 years left of enrollment eligibility because he's a graduate student. He's already graduated. But I don't know. I think we need to lower our expectations a little bit because ESPN's been talking about, hey, well, all we've heard all summer is that he gave Jameis a run for his money, this and that. I mean, I don't know. I'm worried. I am seriously worried. And you may think that
Alabama
don't need to be worried, but I am.
Well, I'm hoping that he turns out to be John Parker Wilson, because I'd like to win a few ball games against Alabama.
Hey, John Parker Wilson was quite successful.
He was not successful against Mississippi State.
That's true.
So he pretty much handed two games to us for
now,
2 years.
John Parker Wilson, is he the one that has the radio show in Birmingham?
No, that's Jay Barker.
Jay Barker.
Who was the greatest guy ever.
Married to Sarah Evans now, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Brady Bunch.
John Parker Wilson's only he got sacked a lot, but also his claim to fame is he was the quarterback when we beat Georgia in the blackout game. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Y'all wore them.
Yeah, that was his finest moment. Other than that, he was a very, very average quarterback.
All right.
Oh, yeah. That's good stuff, man.
Since we're talking football and it's our NFL draft coverage,
is Johnny Football still out there?
He is still out there.
Johnny Football is still on the board.
What pick are we at? Do you know?
22 with the Eagles.
I just went to the Packers, just took Keyshawn Clinton Dix.
What if I told you, looking back at this, that we have seen Jadeveon Clowney go number one, two Texas A&M players. We have seen two Alabama players go, a Tennessee player go, and a Louisville player not named Teddy Bridgewater and Johnny Manziel still on the board. What would you say to that?
Wow. Who's the Tennessee player that went? Jawan James?
I'd say that.
Jawan
James. I'm scared he's going to get hurt. Yeah, Jawan James.
Wow, he went that early, huh? I didn't think he was going to go that early.
Who did he go to?
I thought he was going to be late.
19 maybe. To the Dolphins.
And wow. Who's the prior guy at Jets?
That's the guy from Louisville. So he's a 5'11", free safety.
Did Drew Brees just get that freaking kid from Oregon State?
He did.
Oh, my God. They're going to kill everybody. That dude is faster than Usain Bolt.
And here's your rundown of your remaining Johnny Manziel possible places he could go.
Obviously. He's going to be there in the second round for the Titans. Yep. They're going to pick him in the second round. It's going to be awesome.
We've got Eagles, Chiefs, Bengals, Chargers, and then the Browns again at 26. The Cardinals, who have already passed on him at already. The Panthers, Patriots, 49ers, Broncos, and Seahawks.
Did you say the Browns?
Tom Brady.
Did you say the Browns?
The Browns are at 26.
So they could potentially pass on him three times, right? Because they traded down.
And then they traded back up. What the hell were they doing that for? Nobody's going to take that cornerback. God, it was such a Cleveland thing to do, man. Good gravy. I'm going to trade. I mean, they got but the Titans picked a backup offensive tackle at 11, so we don't have anything else to worry about.
Yeah, for real. Go Titans. Wow.
That was basically, they called 30 other teams to ask them if they would want to trade the pick. Because we got nothing.
Oh, that's awesome. All right, so what else football-wise?
Shane, we need to mention, before we forget, this Pac-Man Jones thing.
Oh, yes.
I can't wait to hear what Blair has to say about it.
This ought to be fun. What is this?
Anything involving Pac-Man Jones is fun.
Read the tweet. You got the tweet up, Nick.
All right, this is from May 5th, official Tennessee Volunteers football Twitter account.
And it was not a Cinco de Mayo hoax.
It is not a Cinco de Mayo hoax. Butch Jones quote right here. We're bringing in Adam Pac-Man Jones to speak to our team. As many
That's
examples
right.
you can bring into talk about character.
not good character, mind you.
Just
but just character.
You can talk about the lack of character, right?
Man. Stripper main.
So Pac-Man made it rain in Knoxville.
Yeah. So the question, of course, is was the team meeting held in a strip club? I don't know what the quality of strip club is in Knoxville, but I'm sure Pac-Man Jones found out and let all the players know.
Yeah. It just baffles me. I mean, I understand that you want to have a player come in that's relevant to the younger guys, but really, I think you could have found somebody that had a little more troubled past. I mean, Richard Sherman would have been a better get. I mean,
Well, and you do the whole troubled past thing so the guy can tell you what he's learned from his mistakes and how he's made something out of himself, but you don't do troubled present. Yeah. Like Pac-Man Jones is troubled past and troubled present.
It's like, didn't he like beat up his girlfriend outside the stadium like a year ago or something?
Yeah, he's.
It's been less than a year, yeah.
Yeah, he's been in trouble in the past 15 months, so.
Yeah, go get like Chris Carter or somebody.
Richard Sherman grew up in Compton. I mean, there's a story there.
That dude's a smart cat, man. He went to Stanford, man. They just don't let people.
Apparently, he's a smart cat. Just the deal he just stinked, 14 mil plus a season. Come on, 40 of it's guaranteed. Good job, Richard Sherman. But realistic.
Fifth rounder too.
And I saw another tweet. We're going back and forth because of this draft, but I saw a great tweet. Russell Wilson and Richard Sherman, a third and a fifth rounder to open the draft coverage on ESPN. I think it was Pat Forty that said that.
Yeah, that's right. So hey, I've got a question for you about football. What do y'all think about the new scheduling format with the
– There's a good topic.
I mean, I don't think it changed realistically. I mean, let's think about this objective.
Well, outside of
what did it affect? Three schools?
Yeah, Ole Miss, Mississippi State. That's about it.
I mean,
because we can't get anybody to come to freaking play our asses.
Vandy plays Wake Forest, right? That's the or Georgia Tech.
They've played Wake a few years recently.
So they've been playing somebody every year. Kentucky plays Louisville every year. Alabama.
Yeah, South Carolina plays Clemson, and Georgia plays Georgia Tech. And, you know, so, I mean, it's a good deal. I mean, it's frustrating from a state fan.
It's an olive branch.
Yeah.
First
of all, it's the SEC saying, we don't think we got to schedule 9 conference games to get 2 teams into the playoff system.
Yeah.
When we don't get a team in the playoff system and scheduling becomes an issue, then we will actually talk about 9 games. But then to have the clowns in the Pac-12 and the other yahoos talk about 9 games, they're a bunch of idiots, first of all. Because, I mean, if you're going to sit there and tell me that the Pac-12 is going to dictate to the SEC that they're not playing on the same terms when we've just whipped everybody's ass for 7 out of the last 8 years. And, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Tell us how you really feel, Blair.
I mean, please.
No, that's a good point, though. They're definitely kind of posturing a little, and they're going to see, okay, how's this going to go if we don't go to 9? Because we don't think we have to. And if we have to, then we all win here. But if our hand is forced, then we will go to. Well, I don't know if we all win, because I kind of won a 9 game from a fan standpoint. But in terms of allowing our teams to have some more winnable games, the SEC wins. And you're right. As soon as we get left out because of not having that 9th game, then things will change.
But I can tell you, as a Mississippi State fan, I hate it. I like the 8 games. I like the traditional rivalry because I like playing Kentucky, because I think Kentucky and Mississippi State both believe that, hey, they're going to break even in that series over a freaking 10-year period.
It's a coin flip at some point.
So I like that. The problem I don't like is if I'm Mississippi State, I want to play 1 FCS school, and I want to play 3 other cupcakes, and I want to win 4 freaking ball games, and then I want to figure out how I'm going to win ball games in the 8 games in the SEC, because – I've been living in the SEC West that is just, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, State last year had the 4th toughest schedule because they played Oklahoma State and Houston. And they played an 8-game schedule. So the problem that State's going to have, I mean, Kentucky will probably, I mean, if you don't have the built-in Louisville, Kentucky would probably have the same thing, maybe, but they would probably have an easier time. It's hard to get a, It's hard for Mississippi State to say, hey, I want to go to a top 5 or one of the big 5 conferences and get a home and home, because they can't get anybody to come to Starkville because it's just not an easy place to get to.
But I think it's easier than you think. I mean,
they've been trying it for 6 years.
Because you don't – here's the thing. You don't have to get the elite teams in that in that top 6 conferences.
Right.
I mean, you can go work it towards the bottom of the barrel, and it still works.
Yeah,
it's still
like
a team.
Indiana's going to get called by everybody.
But But that's a good payday for Indiana.
I think now that it's mandated and the SEC office is going to help in kind of broker those deals. The way state was going to get – state's not interested in – they're not going to go and say, I'm going to play one game in Starkville and two at your place. But also, Mississippi State is in that lower fourth where they're not going to – they're having a hard time getting like a Wake Forest or somebody that says, hey, if I can go play Alabama, I know I can get a nice payday, and if I lose, I'm supposed to lose. But if I go play Mississippi State, I win nothing because I'm either supposed to beat them because they're not going to be one of the better teams in the SEC. If they beat us, I lose more than be actually playing the game. So it's like us playing Southern Miss. Like we started this whole Southern Miss thing. We're playing Southern Miss at home. Every state fan hates it because we got nothing. I mean, if we lose to Southern Miss, it's a disaster. If we beat them, we're supposed to. So we're kind of the stepchild of the SEC when it comes to that stuff. And your campuses aren't easy to get to. They're not in a metropolitan area. I mean, you flip and got to fly into like Memphis and, you know, drive through the damn Delta, you know, and I mean, it's not easy. And Ole Miss is kind of the same way, is that it's just not an easy place to get to.
Yeah. But I think it's going to be less of an issue going forward. Like you said, you're going to have the SEC support.
Well, they don't have a choice now. They got to go.
But you're going to have the SEC support. You've also got the Big Ten that realistically are going to support in some way, shape, or form because it only bodes well for their conference because of the Big Ten SEC tie-in at the end of the season. They have some tie-ins, and so you're going to be able to get some of that. I don't think it's as big of an issue as you're making it out to be, Blair. And I don't have to look at Mississippi State trying to have to schedule those, but you know, you look at it, and it only affected just a couple programs. And like you said, it's not that you don't want those teams. Now you're going to get the help to get them. So it's a win because if you're playing the lower echelon of any of these other six conferences, that's a good chance that you can win that game. You've got just as good a chance winning that as you do Kentucky.
I'm just worried about. You're talking about in 2016. So now you've got to take a game off the books that's already on there. You got to find a team that has an available date in 2016, and you got to be on the same week. You know, there's a lot more to it than just saying, hey, I'm just going to go pick this team over here in this conference and tell them we're going to play. Because, I mean, now that it's mandated, you're going to have to actually work with it. But it is going to – I mean, the SEC will help to do that. I just don't like it because I like the Kentucky way of under Rich Brooks of scheduling and going to bowl games. And that is, let me win four bowl games, and then I got to figure out a way to
win two.
Win three of them, and let's go to a bowl game, and let's win consistently and get to where we need to go. And then we can start taking steps once you've done that for 6 or 7 years. Because, I mean, we barely figured out a way to get to 6-6 last year to get to a bowl game. And if we didn't have the Houston game that we actually got paid $3 million for, then, you know, that's a loss that we could have chalked up as a W somewhere else and we would have never had an issue.
But you're the dark horse for the SEC, right, Nick?
Absolutely.
And Blair,
my wife wouldn't let me name a new son Dak for some reason.
Can't believe that. No. She's mean.
Nah, the kicker for state is not only do they have Prescott at quarterback and all the receivers and offensive line, all that, is they got 22 of their top 25 defensive players back on a defense that ended up 18th in the country and fourth in the SEC and really grew up without a secondary. So, and that's with about 90 starts missing on the defense last year. So, They're gonna be pretty stout. Plus the scheduling is favorable. We got four easy games. We got Kentucky and Vanderbilt on the east. We got Alabama and LSU away from home, so you get Texas A&M and Auburn at home. So you know it just fits better. And I think we finally got a quarterback that can run with what Mullen wants to do. And I think there's a shot to, you know, get to that 9 or 10 win season. We'll see.
So before we go further down that, I wanted to jump on the other side of the scheduling thing for the whole league. What do y'all think about LSU complaining so much about the Florida thing? Like, I think it's really odd. I mean, yeah, I know Florida's a perennial powerhouse, but you don't hear Tennessee complain about Alabama or vice versa. You don't hear Auburn and Georgia complaining about each other.
You want me to tell you why?
Tell me why.
Because in what, the 24 years that they've actually been playing that game, I think LSU's won like six of them. So what everybody forgets is before Nick Saban got there, LSU was a disaster for 18 years. And even at a disaster, they beat the crap out of Mississippi State every year because we haven't won one in like a quarter of a century. But the whole thing that goes on with that is not only that, their biggest thing is Alabama. They have actually played, I think, Georgia and Florida more. Like, I think they played them like 22 times over that span of time, those two on the schedule or something like that, 18 times, and Alabama's played them like six. So it's there's been a proportionate number. I still think it's a flawed deal because – I also think LSU is playing with they're the only thing in their whole state. So it's unlike in Alabama where you got Alabama and Auburn and in Mississippi and Florida, Georgia. LSU's the whole show in Louisiana. So whatever they start talking about, I just disregard it because they're a bunch of clowns.
Yeah, that's a good point about them being the only show in the state. They have an advantage built in because they're not having to deal with half the state belonging to another powerhouse of a school. That's very true.
It's a travesty that it took them two decades to figure out how to actually win football games again. So with all that in state. But they have kind of thrown their hands up and really made it stink. I mean, really the only, what is it, three teams that were – I mean, really, it was LSU and then, of course, Texas A&M and South Carolina because they were just the oddballs out and were like, you know, why not? I got to fly all the way across the country to play each other. Well, there's really not a built-in rivalry. You know, why don't we just play everybody? But, you know, they don't really count. But I think Ole Miss and Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, Kentucky wanted to keep the permanents because they felt good about those rivalries. I think Missouri and Arkansas – is kind of is a natural rivalry, and I think the other ones were set in stone. So, you know, I'm glad that they didn't do the Auburn, Georgia, and the Tennessee, Alabama, then have everybody else rotate. I don't think we need to be setting things up on one set of terms or whatever. So I'm good with it.
That would have gotten messy.
Yeah.
I don't think that would have flown. I think they'd have just said that's not going to happen. If it would have came to that.
I mean, it does stink that, I mean, what is it? I mean, if you're rotating one person, I mean, one team now, I mean, it really takes you, what, eight years before you actually see a team? If I'm thinking that's right. Well, yeah. You know, so, I mean, you'll go to their place every 4 years and they'll come to your place the other 4 years.
It'd be every 11 years, wouldn't it?
No, it's just side.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like at Mississippi State, you'd only see Georgia come through once out of every 8 years or Florida or whatever, whereas before you would see them a lot more regularly. So.
Yeah, every 3 years. That was Saban's main point about going to 9 was for the players to be able to play every team in the league. That's a good point, I guess. But, yeah, even more so for the fans. Like for – us, you know, Blair, you and I, we live in Nashville. I would love if Alabama, and I'm sure you would love if Mississippi State came to play Vanderbilt every 3 years like it used to be. Yeah. But now we're going to go a decade and they'll come one time.
Yeah, exactly. So
that's sort of an argument for 9 games, but I don't know. I think eventually it'll go there, and I think it'll just have to, but I think they're going to hold at 8 as long as they can. And just count on being able to keep teams in that playoff.
They'll go to
what are y'all's thoughts about the new playoff rating system? I mean, they created a new poll. I mean, what the hell are they doing? Why don't we just keep the BCS and just take the top four?
Because we can't do that, Blair. That's the whole reason we have a selection
that committee. That is ridiculous, man. It's not even a selection committee. It's just creating a new poll.
Yeah, all they've done now is take what was supposedly an unbiased thing because it was run by computers, reproduce it exactly, except they've injected bias into it by adding a human element. It's comical.
And, you know, I don't really know how I feel about it, to be honest with you, because several times, obviously Auburn got snubbed in 2004, and we can point back to a couple of times, but if you play an SEC schedule and you do the things that you do, there are a few times that the BCS wasn't going to work your way, and we even see in Alabama's situation a couple times, you know, a bunch of stuff fell, and Alabama worked their way back into a national championship more than once. But I don't know. I mean, this bias thing really bothers me because as an SEC fan, I mean, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but deep down, and I don't know the politics of this, and it really is politics when you think about it. You know, we've got somebody from every single place in the United States. We've got Condoleezza Rice, who has Stanford ties and Alabama ties and all this stuff. But just the fact that, just in the back of my mind, that bias could play just a tiny bit of significance in this really bothers me, because it's one thing when you're talking about a selection committee with 68 teams going to the NCAA tournament. Yeah, it hurts to be snubbed with that 69th team to not get there into that play-in game. But if we're sitting here and we've got Alabama or Auburn or LSU on the cusp, maybe trying to, even if we're trying to get two teams in, and you've got that maybe a one seed and a four seed, and that four seed gets snubbed, that's going to feel kind of bad, just because if we look back and we're like, well, there was no rhyme or reason for that. The poll said it, everybody else said it, but, you know, all these people that we've deemed, you know, good enough to vote didn't vote them in, and now we're sitting here with, you know, something we don't want. So, I don't know. That's how I feel about it.
I mean, the BCS, I mean, for, you know, for 15 years, I mean, it had, you know, one or two years where, you know, it had its issues, but I thought for something where you were going over a 15-year period of time, they got it right most of the time for the one game. The one thing I hated about the BCS was it ranked everything right. It's just that the bowls screwed us all, because you always would get the national championship game, but you never got another good game, so to speak. You never got – you know, all of the games, you know, were, they just picked the wrong ones. I just think it's going to be, I think it's interesting. What I think it also does is that I was of the opinion that the reasons that presidents allowed it to go to four games was because they wouldn't allow it to go to eight very quickly. So I figured that, hey, we're going to be at four for a while. I think we're going to eight faster than what it was anticipated. I think it's going to get here sooner before than later, but it'll be interesting to see how it works out.
And they kind of, in my opinion, they set a precedence for an eight team playoff as well. They announced, I don't know if you guys saw this, but the top seed, other than the national championship game, but in the qualifiers, you know, we've got rotating qualifiers. The top seed is actually going to get this kind of home field advantage. In essence, you know, if we have Florida State as a one seed playing a four seed, they're not going to send them to Pasadena. You know, if the Orange Bowl is an automatic qualifier, well, they're going to send them to the closest bowl game. And that's something that is almost like an NBA or an NFL playoff, you know, with a home field advantage. Obviously, they're not playing at home, but, I mean, you know, if Notre Dame or somebody, not Notre Dame, but, you know, some West Coast team is playing Florida State, you know, in the Orange Bowl, I mean, that's a home game. It's like if, you know, Alabama played in the Chick-fil-A Bowl or something.
But that only is going to help the South.
Oh, yeah.
And the exactly. West. I mean, because if you're Penn State, there's no home field.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you're going to go to Pasadena. You're going to go to Texas. You're going to go to New Orleans. You're going to go to Florida. None of those are close to Pennsylvania. I mean, geographically, Florida's closer than Pasadena, but it's not exactly close. So.
And, Shane, if we have a breaking news, not to interrupt anything, but if we have a breaking news sound bed here, can we overlay that real quick? Johnny Manziel to the Browns, 22nd pick. They traded up for him from the 26th pick. And, just fun fact here, the Browns have now drafted three quarterbacks with the 22nd pick. Brady Quinn, Brandon Whedon, and Johnny Manziel.
Well, if you believe in omens, then that's not a good one for old Johnny Football.
There you go. Back to normal program.
Wow. So they traded out of their first pick and then traded back into their last two picks in the first round.
Exactly. And they still have another one on the board at 31. And right after him at 23, the Chiefs got Dee Ford. So there were three SEC picks in a row from 21 to 23.
Wow. So how many SEC players is that so far? Eight?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten.
10 of 22?
10 of 23?
10 of 24.
Okay. Because there was only supposed to be, they only had projected 9 to go in the first round, and last year they only had, what, 12 or 13 that went, which was the record?
Yeah.
So they've got an opportunity. I mean, who else is on the board? C.J. Mosley's gone. Clinton Diggs.
What about Matthews, Vanderbilt?
He's gone. Oh, Jordan, he's not going first round.
So here's your SEC players.
You say that, but they brought him to New York. He was invited and brought out on stage as one of the top prospects.
Jordan Matthews?
Yes.
Yeah, he's in New York. But they also brought 30 this year, so there are going to be some that don't go in the first round that went to New York.
Why would he choose to go to New York? Like, if I wasn't a guaranteed, like, top 10 pick, I'm hauling ass not showing up there.
Maybe if you're Jordan Matthews, you just want to see New York, though.
Yeah, experience New York, a free trip to New York. That's kind of a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Maybe if it's not a heartbreaking situation. On the NFL's dime,
I'm sure they're... But you kind of know that you're not going to, like...
Yeah, you would have to go into it knowing you're not going to the first round. You're making this a party on their dime.
Exactly, because I'm sure they're taking you to some really cool parties. You're meeting beautiful women, I bet, and you're just kind of hanging out in New York City. I mean, if you have the mindset, I'm not embarrassing myself because I don't expect to go 10th overall, I'd probably do it because it'd just be a freaking blast as a 22-year-old single man.
You don't even hang out in the green room. You just head out as soon as the draft starts.
Yeah, you're not even there for the actual draft.
And who feels better right now? Jordan Matthews, who probably wasn't a lock for the first round and isn't in New York, or Johnny Manziel, who's, you know, gotten so much face time and slipped to the 22nd pick.
That's true. All right, y'all talk me into it, man. I'm thinking like a 37-year-old married dude with two kids.
That'll happen, unfortunately.
All right. Anything else before we wrap up tonight?
I'm watching baseball, baby.
Yeah, you know, Blair, we've got a big series coming up in the next weekend with you guys.
Yeah, it's at y'all's place. Maybe our coaches will fight the security guard next time.
Yeah, hopefully. I don't know. The problem with Alabama is, I don't know if you've been following this, but
yeah,
Alabama has shocked a lot of people by, I guess, winning pretty much every game that they should. But the only problem is when they get up against top SEC talent like Florida and LSU, it's just like a no contest. I mean, Florida was going up 6-0 in a weekend series, you know, in consecutive games. And Alabama did fight back, but, I mean, right now Alabama just doesn't have the pitching, and they're just young. They've got the pitchers, but they're young. I mean, they're all we've got four or five freshman pitchers that, you know, see regular action. So.
Yeah, I mean, the SEC is fun to watch in baseball just because, I mean, give you an example. I mean, Mississippi State's just been a complete roller coaster. I mean, you're either in the depths of despair or you're on a three-game sweep on the road. It's just what they do. But they win 5 in a row, and then they lose 2 out of 3 inexplicably. Then they win 3 in a row. But, I mean, to give you guys an idea, Mississippi State went into 2 weekends ago as the 6th seed going into the tournament. If it ended at they lose 2 out of 3 and drop to like 7th or 8th in the list. They go to Missouri, win 3 in a row, and they jump to 4th in the league. then lose two out of three, and they fall to seventh, and then they won three in a row last week, and now they're third. So it's just like everybody just bunched together there. So it's a lot of fun. We got two more weekends. I think we got Tennessee at home this weekend. I think we go to Alabama next weekend. That's a big series, Alabama one, because, I mean, up until last weekend with the sweep by Florida, I mean, you guys were right there with Ole Miss, and so everybody's kind of in that 2 to 3 game range there. So if you lose two out of three or win two out of three, you're moving up or moving down.
Yeah, and not to focus on this, I mean, obviously the top 25 in baseball really means nothing with conference tournaments and everything else going in. But the SEC has 8 teams in the top 25, with Kentucky, who just dropped out at 25. And, I mean, there's a lot of parity with about 5 of those teams.
Yeah.
So that's what's going to make it interesting. I mean, I'm going to try to make it to Hoover for, you know, 2 or 3 games. We're going on vacation for the rest of the weekend. But, I mean, this is going to be a fun SEC tournament, and there's at least 3 teams who are, you know, in the top echelon of teams in the nation.
I mean, you've got Florida, and you've got Ole Miss is playing really well. And then you've got, you know, you got teams like South Carolina. They got like 5 dudes hurt. I mean, they're playing like just straight up freshmen. Vanderbilt's won 7 in a row. You know, Vanderbilt lost a lot of, you know, they lost a lot of fielding last year that they haven't been able to replace, and they kind of went through a lull there. But I'll be interested to see. I mean, we'll see how it all works out. It's all about getting into the regional, and that's when everything really starts, and you get lined up, and then you got to make a run. But, you know, I mean, Mississippi State was 12-12 last year in the conference before they made their run to the national championship game. So
you guys still have a possibility to host a regional then?
No. I don't know. If we won, if we swept the next 2 weekends and then ran through the tournament, maybe, but we lost too many in the early set, and then we're 14-10 in the league. Mississippi State, we haven't been able to replace Adam Frazier at the leadoff spot and Hunter Renfro, the big bat that we had last year, and then our 2 pitchers that we're supposed to hit this year and kind of come back for us have not hit. I mean, we can't get them out of the third inning. So so we're just kind of sputtering along. So, but last weekend was good for us. I mean, when you go through a weekend series against Auburn, at Auburn, and they score a run for the first time in the last inning of the third game. So they went 27 straight scoreless innings.
That was a big pick-me-up that you guys needed. And, I mean, you look for things, like you said. I mean, baseball is just like basketball, maybe even more. It just matters. You just got to get yourself into one of these regionals, and if you can't host, then okay. You just got to put your head down, and, you know, like you guys did last year, you can look up and be in the national championship before you know it.
Yeah, it's all about the bat. I mean, like, the problem with State is they got to have all 9 players hitting, and – so even when they were winning early in the season, you know, they'd lose a game where they just couldn't hit. You know, they have 3 hits for the game, and you know, and then the other 2 games they would just wear people out. So I don't know, if they can get some of the pitching kind of tied up and make this stretch here, we'll see what happens. But I tell you what, I'd like to take in a couple of games at Dewey Noble. They got that place rocking again, man. So,
well, guys, thank you all so much for being on a podcast. I know, it's on me for having this delay, but I think we had a good one. The time off was, we didn't skip a beat getting back into the discussion. So, Blair, you are all fired up tonight, and I appreciate you bringing it hard tonight.
it's that keyboard, man, got me all pissed off.
Well, whatever it takes. Britton, thank you for being on. I know it's been a while. Are you done with classes?
Oh yeah, I graduated in December, so I am just an employee now, no longer an employee and a student.
And a dad. Nick.
Yeah, and a dad, so that's a different ball game.
Nick's done with classes for the first year at Alabama, back home, getting to enjoy the summer. So thank you for being on.
Always. Always a great time.
And, guys, we're going to do this again soon. With that, we'll call this podcast done.
Awesome.